Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
106.1.
Hello. I'll turn the mic on, shall I? Here we go. Great start. It's been a while since I've done this. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. I'm Dan, and I'm your chairperson for today.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. Hey, Nick. All right, if you'd like to, Nick's bringing an array of water-type drinks. That's great. All right, well, if you'd like to all join me, and we'll start, as we always do with AA meetings, with the Serenity Prayer. So, God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Great stuff. Okay, now I'm going to read the AA preamble now. It just explains a little bit about what AA is and what it isn't. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And in the studio this morning, we have a group from Living Sober, which is still officially my home group. So so welcome, everybody. And with the group Living Sober, it meets on Fridays at 5:30. And the reason I chose that for my home group is that it's prime drinking. It used to be prime drinking time for me, so the excuse to rush off to a meeting at 5:30 on a Friday was something that I committed to quite early on. So at the meeting, there is a book called Living Sober, and we read from that book. And normally we start off the meeting by reading a little bit at the beginning. It's called About That Title, so I'll read that now. About that title. Even the words stay sober, let alone live sober, offended many of us when we first heard such advice. Although we had done a lot of drinking, many of us never felt drunk and were sure we almost never appeared or sounded drunk. Many of us never staggered, fell, or got thick tongues. Many others were never disorderly, never missed a day at work, never had automobile accidents, and certainly were never hospitalized nor jailed for drunkenness. We knew lots of people who drank more than we did, and people who could not handle their drinks at all. We were not like that. So the suggestion that maybe we should stay sober was almost insulting. Besides, it seemed unnecessarily drastic. How could we live that way? Surely there was nothing wrong with a cocktail or two at a business lunch or before dinner. Wasn't everyone entitled to relax with a few drinks or have a couple of beers before going to bed? However, after we learned some of the facts about the illness called alcoholism, our opinions shifted. Our eyes have been opened to the fact that apparently millions of people have the disease of alcoholism. Medical science does not explain its cause, but medical experts on alcoholism assure us that any drinking at all leads to trouble for the alcoholic or problem drinker. Our experience overwhelmingly confirms this. So not drinking at all, that is, staying sober, becomes the basis of recovery from alcoholism. And let it be emphasized, living sober turns out to be not at all grim, boring and uncomfortable as we had feared, but rather something we begin to enjoy and find much more exciting than our drinking days. We'll show you how. So it was a little piece from the Living Sober book, which is studied by the Living Sober Meeting. So now I think we'll just start sharing some experience, strength and hope. So I think we'll kick off with Victoria. Would you like to share?
Sure. Kia ora koutou. My name's Victoria and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Drew.
Yeah. I love that meeting, Living Sober. That was my home group for about a year. And I really enjoyed reading the text, Living Sober, because it's the kind of practical advice on how the heck I was going to do anything in life without drinking when I first got sober. I had no idea how to, you know, handle emotion. I had no idea how to socialize with people. I had no idea how to, you know, behave appropriately at work. And the, you know, the, that meeting and the chapters in the, in that book, Living Sober, kind of helped me, with how to do that stuff. Like, how do I, tell people that I'm not drinking? What do I say when someone offers me a drink? How do I go to a party or a function or something important like a wedding, and you know, show up and without having to fear drinking? Those were the kind of questions that I had, and I think a lot of us had, because up until that point where I put down a drink for hopefully the last time, drinking had accompanied me in every part of my life. Or at least by the end of my drinking. It's not how it started. I started drinking at about 15. And it was something I found through fun and partying and fitting in with the older, much cooler people, I thought, that I hung out with at high school. And I immediately found out that I just loved the effect produced by alcohol. I loved being drunk. I loved the kind of calm and relaxation that would wash over me. I loved how outgoing I was. Turns out I'm pretty outgoing anyway, but I really did think it was the alcohol that transformed me into this new person that I didn't recognize but really liked. Mm-hmm. And by drinking, I felt like I started getting invited into this whole new world because I started getting invited to parties. I started, you know, meeting interesting people and going out, and I really thought I'd arrived. I didn't really notice at the time that I was starting to not care so much about things that had previously been important to me. I was quite athletic in high school, and, you know, I played a few competitive sports that were really important to me, and I just kind of dropped out of them. I stopped training, and I just kind of lost interest in any kind of extracurricular activities outside of drinking, really. And I kind of got it together just enough in my last year at high school in order to go to university. I knew that I needed to get a certain kind of level of marks to go, but beyond that, I was always just focused on what am I doing this weekend? You know, where are we going? Whose party is it going to be? Whose creepy older brother is going to buy us alcohol? You know, like that was all that my week was about, was just about the weekend. I was living for the weekend, as they say. And then when I left to go to university, that's when all bets were off, because all of a sudden I didn't have to wait for the weekend. And that was an exciting thing that I learned, was that you can drink on weeknights too. And that's how my binge drinking started getting closer and closer together. And that's what I hear a lot in the sharing of other people in these rooms, and also in the literature, is that as an alcoholic, we find that this disease is progressive. It is a progressive illness, and it gets worse, not better. So the way I drank at 15 was not how I drank at 18, was not how I drank at 20. So I started, yeah, the binges got closer and closer together. They got a lot heavier. I started having consequences from my drinking. So I started losing friendships out of fights. I started having issues in my kind of romantic relationships from things that I would do when I was drunk. I started ending up in places and not knowing where I was, with strange bruises. I had to start initially borrowing and then actually straight up stealing money, because I would lose all my money from drinking before I'd managed to pay rent, or, you know, I needed money for food or money for the bus. So that was still kind of The consequences were small enough that I could still laugh about it. I became known in my social circles as the one with the good stories. I think we all know someone like that where, oh, it's so funny, like, you know, Victoria's always, you know, she ended up on a roof the other night, or, oh, do you know the one about when they went to the beach and, you know, like, nearly fell through the, like, wharf that was fenced off? So there were always, like, these different big stories, and I could make them into these, like, misadventures and, you know, tales. And then I'd go home and have a shower and just cry. And that was kind of the splitting off of my life that my drinking caused, was that I started living these two separate lives where there was the fun party girl me that would, you know, go out drinking. And then also there was like the studious me that was, you know, in law school and, you know, like working really hard. And then there was the side that people didn't see, which was the nastiness of my drinking and the fallout the next day when I was just filled with shame and regret and just sobbing in the shower. That just became almost a daily thing, and my drinking became almost a daily thing. Looking back now, I think it was quite a conscious decision, but at the time it felt accidental, where I kind of would find a reason to drink every day of the week. And I would drink with different people, so that if you ask someone, oh, does, you know, Victoria have a drinking problem? They'd say, no, she only drinks once a week with us. But what they didn't know was I'd drink with my school friends on a Monday night, and then my site mates on a Tuesday, and then the debating club on a Wednesday, and then student night on a Thursday. So I always could find people to drink with. And that was the other thing I noticed as my drinking progressed, was that like attracts like, and the kind of people that I started gravitating to were the heavy drinkers, were the people using drugs. I started kind of losing the friends that I'd had previously through, you know, even friends I'd been friends with for quite a few years or had really close bonds with, because drinking became more important to me. And after a couple of years, drinking was the most important thing, and I don't even think about it as the consequences of my drinking anymore, because I was fine with it. I found a way to be okay with giving up most of the things in my life in order to continue to drink. I became a person who, if something stood in the way of me and drinking, it had to go. And that meant dropping out of university. That meant losing jobs, losing relationships, getting kicked out of flats, losing almost all of my friends. And then actually eventually losing my health and my sanity. And I was hospitalized multiple times. And it almost meant losing my life. I didn't really want to live anymore the way that I was living. And I did attempt suicide a few times. And that's what kind of brought me to the point where myself and also the people who were still around me and cared about me kind of said, what are we going to do? You can't keep doing this. But I didn't know another way, so I couldn't stop, because I didn't know how to stop, and I didn't know what I'd even do with myself. You know, I'd try to not drink, but then when I didn't drink, I just would feel so uncomfortable, and I was like a tightly wound spring that would just get tighter and tighter and tighter until it just, you know, sprung out, and then I'd relapse and drink again. But I just couldn't do it, and I actually got to a place where I kind of spiritually couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't face dragging myself through that, you know, intense demoralization of another drinking lapse. And that's when I admitted defeat. And I was very fortunate, very, very fortunate that I still had my family, and I'm from a background where my family could afford to send me to a good treatment center, which is something many people don't have, and I'm very aware of the fact that I could have been on the street if it wasn't for just luck of what class I'm in, you know, and that's something that I'm really grateful for. However, it wasn't enough, and that's the thing about my drinking as well, is that nothing was really enough. Like, no person could get me sober, no hospital could get me sober, not even the treatment center, because even in the treatment center, I didn't want a bar of it. I didn't want to go to meetings. I still didn't really think I was an alcoholic. I thought I was too young and too together, which is hilarious because I had nothing and I was completely mad. And when I got out, it still wasn't enough. Like, I still wanted to drink. I still had no idea how to live life without alcohol. And a couple of weeks after I got out of rehab, I heard that someone I was in rehab with, who was also an alcoholic, had killed herself. And it was at that exact moment that I just had this really clear thought. It was quite spooky of, I need to do something tomorrow. Like, I need to take some drastic action because I'm so close to picking up. And if I drink again, I will die. Like, I have proven that to myself with the drinking and the drugs. I will, or taking myself out, I will die. But I can't keep feeling this way or I'll kill myself. And so I was at that fork in the road, and that's when I did what everyone had been telling me to do in treatment for months. And I looked up at meetings list online, and I went to the meeting that was closest to my house the next night, and I walked in, and my stomach dropped because it wasn't old men with paper bags who'd rolled out of the gutter. It was, you know, shiny, happy people, and some of them were women. Some of them were women, and some of them were young. Some of them were my age, and I went, oh, crap, I guess I am this thing. I can be this thing. And I said, am I in the right place? And everyone laughed, and I didn't really, I felt really angry and confused. But now I understand, because of course I was in the right place. You know, most of us don't come here by accident. We come here because we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. And I had no idea that day just how much I was in the right place. And I heard people sharing, and they had stories like mine, but their lives were better now. And I was so curious, how did they get from my position to where they were now? And a tough American woman came up to me after the meeting and said, you need a home group, you need a sponsor. This is your home group, I'll be your sponsor, which is a very direct approach, but I needed it. And I think she could see that I needed it. I needed someone to just anchor me, keep me coming back. And that's what I did. Mostly because I had nowhere else to go. I had no friends at that point, no social life, no job. I was just in my parents' apartment 24 hours a day with no internet access, really doing nothing with myself. So coming to meetings was a relief, like just having something to do for an hour, knowing I was safe from drinking for an hour, getting to talk to people who wanted to talk to me and told me to come back. I'd never been told to come back. You know, for about the last year of my drinking, no one told me to come back. Everyone told me to get out. So that was amazing. And even though I thought that I didn't deserve to be sober, I didn't think that if the people in the rooms knew all the disgusting things that I'd done and the horrible person I was, that they'd think that I deserved to be sober either. I kept coming back. And through working the steps with my sponsor and finding my own higher power, I've managed to stay sober one day at a time since. And I'm so grateful for that. And my life today is unrecognizable and unimaginable from where I was, because the things I thought I wanted when I got sober aren't the things that I want or have now. I've got a whole different life, but it's so much better. So that's why I keep coming back and I keep working the steps and I keep the connection with other people and with something I don't understand but that I rely on. So it's really good to be here today on a Saturday morning, not hungover. And thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks, Victoria. This is Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. We've got the Living Sober group in here today. So now, if you're listening and you want to get in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous, the website in New Zealand is aa.org.nz. On that site, it says, Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it gives you four options immediately. Take our quiz, find a meeting, listen to a meeting online, and contact us. So first of all, if you want to make contact with AA, the best thing to do in New Zealand is ring 0800 229 6757. It's 0800 229 6757. And in many areas of the country, most areas of the country, that number will be manned 24/7 by an alcoholic who's been sober a little while. And they can help with some questions that you might have about AA or about where your nearest meeting is. Although, rather than ring up and ask, what you can also do is find it on the website. So aa.org.nz, and click on, funnily enough, find a meeting. And throughout New Zealand, it'll show you where the nearest meeting is, and you can sort it by day and time and all sort of stuff as well, which is really good. And also on the website, you can actually have access to these meetings on air in like a downloadable podcast format. So again, on aa.org.nz, click on listen to a meeting online, and it'll take you to a list of downloadable buttons, and you can click on that and listen from the site, or download it and listen to it later. So that there are meetings on air. Some of them were done in Wellington, some of them were done in Auckland, but they're all really good. They're all people sharing experience, strength and hope on their own story about alcoholism. And so, there's many ways to get in touch with AA. All right, let's carry on with the sharing now. So, Nick, would you like to share?
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Hi, I'm Nick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nick.
It's a very grey Saturday morning, but I'm glad to be able to come back in here and do this again. I just occurred to me before that this meeting, Living Sober, is one, it's the first meeting that I ever went to, and I'm here with my friend Victoria, who took me into the meeting, and I think, Dan, it might have been your birthday when I did come in to the meeting, the drinking birthday, not the birthday. So it's quite nice to be here with both of you with that in mind as well. I don't really know where to start. Can I swear on air, or is that highly inappropriate?
Not profusely.
I think you said not professionally. No, only unprofessional swearing.
Amateur swearing.
Gosh. I guess I'll just start with my drinking. Obviously, for me, that wasn't something that I really did until I was 18 when I moved to Wellington. Before that, I'd had sort of three occasions in high school when I was like 15, 16, when I sort of like experimented with drinking with friends, and those ended up with lots of vomit. And actually, to be honest, they ended up with me kind of being like, oh, okay, now I know my limits, and I don't want to drink that way. That was not fun. It took me a few years to kind of get back to a point like that. But they left those initial like nights of like far too much vodka for a 15-year-old. Did leave me with a kind of impression of being like, I want to moderate my drinking. I want to not drink like that. I was never popular in school or anything like that for, you know, most of my life growing up. I never felt like a person who was able to fit in or, crack a joke or just be likable for just being me the way I was. Like, I did theatre and stuff, and I loved acting, but I loved doing that because I could be somebody else or just different people, or I could perform on stage and show myself when people otherwise might not notice. And that kind of changed me when I moved here and went to uni, and in the first year not a lot happened because I didn't do what a lot of people do, but they go into a halls of residence and they get thrown into a large group of people and just make friends like that. And I flirted with my sisters in the first year, but I started doing theatre here in Wellington, and it's like the community, it's like an interconnected kind of spider web of people. You meet a bunch of people through a play, and they know people, and it spreads out from there. And I all of a sudden had this group of people who I could hang out with and socialize with. We had this like intense bond from doing a show together, and we'd drink together, and I started to enjoy that. And whereas previously I didn't have any like
I didn't really have any interest in doing that by myself, you know. I wasn't doing it with friends because I wasn't going out. I was just running with my sisters and, like, going to uni. That was basically me. But with meeting people in theatre, I started to drink, like, you know, like three beers in a party. That was like, oh, that's a good night. that's okay by me, just three beers. And then what kind of happened was, over the course of like a couple of years, me meeting, you know, some people in theatre started to become, me all of a sudden finding that I was being liked by people. And for me, that was crazy. The fact that I could make an impression on people and that actually seemed to be like interested or surprised or find me funny or anything like that. For some reason, I felt like I never left a mark or was never interesting. And a big part of that came down to me, what I thought was me drinking. And going out all the time, it started to, in second year of uni, I started to go out a lot more. I loved going to music gigs. I loved going to house parties. And I felt like I wasn't really able to... I relied so heavily on drinking for that, not so much at first, because again it started off with like three beers, and that would be a night for me. That would be fine, and then it'd become like a bottle of Scrumpy or like a bottle of wine, and that would be just fine with no real negative consequences or anything. But it just started to over time it just started to escalate from there. Like in the following year. I dropped out of uni at the end of second year, and was just working full time, and I started to spend a lot more time alone. So, and I still would also go out a ton. I'd go out to parties a lot whenever I kind of could, and scrape in like 6 or 4 hours sleep to go to work or whatever. But then I'd end up spending like a lot more time just by myself in my bedroom, like not really wanting to interact with anybody, and just feeling like kind of afraid, but suppressing that feeling, apart from the fact that I was drinking a lot more in this time, and it was quite regular. It was also weed for me as well, I just started to isolate myself a lot more, and I think I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to be that sociable, likable person at parties. Like, I built up such like a personality for myself to be this party guy, and it would really shake me. Like, if I couldn't hit that level that I thought I should be or I thought I was, and if I encountered like disappointment or anything like that, I'd just like my response would just be like fair, and I'd just want to isolate in my room and do nothing, just play video games and fucking watch porn or fucking whatever, you know, just anything but facing, facing the day. I'd cut off all contact from people and stuff, and just be drinking and using, and that became like my hobby, as well as, you know, still trying to then, when I feel like to actually go out again and sort of live that life. But the flip side of that was so up and down. The flip side of me going out and partying all the time was me isolating and completely removing myself from people. There's just no in between, really, and then doing work on top of that. My life just became this balancing act around when I was going to get my next kind of fix, when I was going to be able to afford it. How many standard drinks does it take me to get to a particular level of buzz that I'd feel coherent enough to speak, you know, to speak properly to people at a party, but also be at that, like, that fizzing kind of level. The weird thing was, it didn't occur to me for You know, this period is like a 3-year period. It didn't really occur to me that, like, actually quitting the alcohol or quitting drugs and stuff was actually, like, a solution. It didn't really occur to me that it was a solution. I thought the problem was just me and my personality. And that if I just fixed some other things, if I just got myself together, then I'd be fine. I'd be able to drink and use like other people. And like a lot of my friends, because a lot of people in the music scene, in the theatre scene, they tend to like drink or use quite heavily. And I'd be, well, they get their, they have their life together. Why can't I have mine, you know? And my therapist suggested it. And I never really seriously considered that that would actually be a valid option because deep down I couldn't really see myself being able to enjoy the things I liked and be the person I wanted, which was a sociable, popular person without alcohol. I couldn't see myself doing that because I've never been that in my life, and it seemed to really coincide with me starting to drink more. And I was never like an angry drunk or a violent drunk, or one who ever really it really caused any like excessive like physical damage or anything while I was drinking. I was never like a highly emotional drunk either. Like I don't know, I'm an actor, so I was pretty good at putting the kind of facade there of being relatively like respectable while still just towing that line of almost being too drunk. And I've still never really heard from people saying that I was like angry or really emotional or anything when I was drinking. Most people just remember me as being fun. And so a lot of people that when I've been like, oh, I don't drink anymore, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a recovering alcoholic, most people are like, oh, okay. I had no idea because I was just like fun party Nick to them when they saw me. On the other hand, when they didn't see me, I was like at home, like self-loathing and isolating and wondering how the fuck I was going to get out of bed, you know, or wondering how I'm going to make my next rent, be able to eat, whatever, because the money more and more just started going to. Just going to get in that next fix. But yeah, I think the consequences of my drinking and using started to make themselves more apparent, and that they especially did in my relationships, like romantic relationships as well. Like I really relate to what you said, Zach, about like if something got in the way of your drinking, then it'll just be like, just cut that out. And like I didn't really see it at first, but definitely that's what I did as well. If people weren't okay with the way I was using or the fact that I was smoking or whatever, you know, instead of being like, oh, maybe I should quit the thing, I'd be like, well, quit the person because obviously they're the problem. It's a little harder for me to pin down the direct consequences of my drinking because not a lot of them were. They're not you're not necessarily a stock standard, like, you know, Nick gets drunk and then, like, destroys something or anything like that. There's no, like, really direct cause and effect like that, that fits into the traditional kind of what you expect somebody with a drinking problem when you say, like, a drinking problem, you know. But on the other hand, I know for me that, like, my drinking, my using was ruining my life. I couldn't function. Properly. I'm bad enough at functioning without alcohol a bunch of the time, you know. But certainly, like, I could see that, like, if I kept on that road, I'm never going to get out of bed again. Like, you know, I'm not going to face the day. And it was affecting my relationships too. It was basically my whole lifestyle, my whole way of thinking began to be revolved around getting that next fix, and that meant that anything that got in the way of that was just an obstacle. This has all felt rather cynical this morning, or a bit more like, I don't know, I don't feel super chirpy, but at the same time, like, that was all then. That's me just trying to recount, like, what my drinking story was. When I'm probably in a mood right now to, like, not necessarily want to recall it all. But on the other hand, right now, today, I'm nearly 1 year sober. And I will be 1 year sober on the 23rd of August. So that makes it a kind of difficult time, like, approaching that date. But on the other hand, it's really amazing that I have been able to get this far. And I want to keep going with that as well. Coming into the rooms, coming into AA for me was something that felt like when I did walk into the Living Sober menu for the first time. I felt like quite comforted. Instead of it being like this really awkward or fearful kind of encounter, instead I felt like I felt very much on the same level as the other people in the room. I didn't feel like I was lesser or anything. I felt like, oh, this is a good place to be. This is a place where I can speak openly and honestly, and other people will know what I'm talking about, because I couldn't really talk to anybody else about my drinking or anything and have them understand it on the same kind of, or from the same perspective. And I met the person who's now my sponsor. I sat beside him in the meeting, he came up and sat beside me, and we, you know, got talking after that meeting, and he's still been my sponsor. He's been my sponsor for a relapse as well. I've had one relapse since I came to the rooms, and he's still my sponsor now, and it's crazy that sort of the amount of support that that person can give you. But it's because of the way the program works that he gets something out of listening to me as a newer member, sharing about my experiences too, because I guess they happen more recently, or because I'm struggling with things that he's already struggled before. It grounds him and brings him back into the reason why he's sober as well. I am grateful to be here. I'm not peppy or super chirpy, but and I've got a bit of a cold as well, so that sucks. But I am happy to be here. So thank you.
Thanks, Nick. This is Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and you're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. We've had the Living Sober group in here today. So now this meeting, AA on Air, does have a presence on Facebook. AA on Air Wellington is our page, and every so often we get messages from people that are listening, because this meeting does go further than just the Wellington area. I mean, we broadcast live on 106.1 FM, but we also, the shows become podcasts and they're downloadable. So they're on iTunes and also on the AA website, which is aa.org.nz. And we do get messages, as I said, from time to time. We've had recently one from Ronald F. And he just said, hey, thank you for your service. So obviously, thank you, Ronald, for listening. I'm not sure where you are in the world, but it's great to know that we're carrying the message to people outside of Wellington. So what I might do is just, I'll share for a bit as well. So I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic. And it was great to be at this meeting, and it's nice to be part of the Living Sober group as well. That was one of the first meetings I went to. And identified with the people straight away, just like I identified with the sharing that I've heard today. And, I'm sitting here nodding and smiling and laughing at the things that people have said, because I relate to it. You know, it's telling my story. And but another thing that attracted me to the Living Sober meeting is like, okay, it's one thing, okay, if I realise that drinking for me is dangerous and I can't do it, okay, well, what happens if I get invited to a birthday party next week? And what happens if I get married and it's my wedding day and everyone raises their glasses? What do I do? And it's kind of like, well, what do I do on the weekends when I used to be sleeping in from drinking? And And what happens on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock? I'm awake. What do I do? You know, and so it's kind of like, and I didn't really know much of that stuff. Some of it I kind of knew intuitively, but some of it was like, well, actually, it's kind of good to go to this meeting and hear other people's perspectives on what they do, and you know, through like practical things like getting plenty of rest. I mean, you know, there's I'll read some of these chapters of the book. I mean, there's using the serenity prayer, and I realized that, you know, praying doesn't mean this, that the AA is religious, because it's absolutely not religious, you know. If it was, I don't think I'd be here. Fending off loneliness, being good to yourself, looking out for over-relation, avoiding dangerous drugs and medications, being wary of drinking occasions, letting go of old ideas, just all these things. And people are able to share their own experiences about those things. And even I'm, able, you know, after a few years, I'm able to share my experience. And now people sort of, you know, might nod and smile at some of the things I say, because, you know, from practical experience, I know that these things work. I mean, you know, I went out to a social event after work last night, and it's very interesting the fact, you know, like people instantly, there are people that are. I know reasonably well, but I haven't been out socially with them before. They're offering me beers and wines. It's like, no thanks. I'm like, you know, and it's like, and most of them, you know, they'll offer it to you once, and if you say no, we say like, you know, I don't drink, and they're like, okay, and they don't mind or care, you know, as long as they've got a drink, and as long as you're happy, they don't mind, you know. And I used to be mortified, you know, what do I tell people if they ask if I want a drink and I say no, what are they going to think? And the answer is, it doesn't matter. it doesn't worry me in the slightest. And so I went out with these people, started at work and then went to a bar, and you know, there was loud music there and there were people drinking, and I ran into some other friends, and one of them bought me a ginger beer, which I was very happy with, and it was a nice big glass, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I sat on that for about an hour, and, you know, I drink soft drinks very differently than I drink alcoholic drinks. And I was able to be there, socialise, have some really good conversations, and left. And I was, looking back, I was there for maybe just over an hour, and it seemed like I was there for a long time. I did a lot. And I didn't go around and say goodbye to everybody before I left. I said goodbye to the people around me and they left. I didn't need, you know, people won't remember when I left or why I left, or, you know, they'll just remember that I was there. And it's things like that, practical things about being a sober alcoholic in the world, that I've learned from rubbing shoulders with other fellows in meetings and outside meetings, and also listening to sharing on the topics from that Living Sober book, and also reading the book itself and reading those practical examples. Because it, like, you know, it just makes things a heck of a lot easier. And you know, and the brilliant thing is, we don't have to do this on our own. We can do it together and help each other. And that's kind of the way the whole thing works. I mean, you know, and that's how my life is at the moment. It's just like, well, I've got choices, and I've also got legs and feet, and I can just use them. You know, if I'm in a situation where, okay, my work here is done, I don't need to be here any longer, I can just leave. I don't have to hang around to the very end like I used to as a drinker. You know, I used to be the last one to leave the bar, then try and find the next bar, and it was tedious. And I'm just so grateful to not have to experience that anymore. But I am mindful though, it is a day at a time. I need to do certain things every day to make sure that I remind myself that I'm an alcoholic, and there are, you know, certain rules don't apply to me in terms of drinking. And so, you know, I can't, there's no dispensation for me to have a drink for any particular reason or no reason. You know, I can do whatever I like, just not drink. And so as long as I remind myself of that, and keep myself in a safe situation, and do things like, if I'm going out socially, have something to eat first, or make sure that there's an escape plan. Just little things like taking care of myself, and, you know, and being in contact with other alcoholics definitely helps. You know, if I'm in a situation that I'm uncomfortable and I can't leave, then, you know, I can ring someone and talk to them about it. You know, it's just things like that. So I'm really grateful to be part of, you know, member of this meeting and a member of this fellowship, and I'm really grateful and thank you for for the Living Sober team coming in and sharing with us. So I think we'll I'll just do a quick plug for AA and just say that the phone number again, 0800 229 6757, and the website is aa.org.nz. All right, so if you'd like to all join me together, and we'll close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
That program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding the Access Internet Radio Project.